Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
We are entering some fascinating territory this week. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, an exciting adventure into paranoia, espionage, psychological warfare, and UFOs. And Nick Redfern is our co-host, reminding us of something he talked about earlier a few months back when he was interviewed about his book about contactees and about this meeting in the diner between Orfeo Angelucci and Adam. And he takes the pill and he suffers, I guess, Angelucci, what we might call a LSD trip of some sort, right?
That's how he comes across, very much like that. He talks about the room being filled with vivid colors. Literally furniture takes on some sort of psychological or ethereal meaning. He says that in his glass of juice or whatever he's got in front of him, that he suddenly sees this little woman dancing in the liquid. And he's totally spaced out, but starts talking all about his UFO experiences. And on top of that, he says that all the while he's doing this, there are two guys sat at the table next to him, staring intently, in military uniforms, no less. Now, of course, as Mark knows from his book, if you look at the time frame of this, early 50s, 52, 53, this is when you had things like the Frank Olson death, MK Ultra, early LSD research, all sorts of things like this. And, you know, I don't want to take too much time away from Mark, it's his interview, but just to suffice to say that it sounds to me very much like that certain of the contactees who were seen as potentially being troublesome from a political perspective may well have been tampered with in some fashion to either get them to change their story or to influence their stories to a more suitable and acceptable mindset. It may actually be ironically that people like the CIA didn't want to destroy the contactee mystery. They may have wanted to use it for their own ends, but wanted to get rid of this pro-communist angle that so many of the contactees seem to espouse.
And that's really fascinating, Nick. And just looking at comparing statements from Adamski with those of Angelucci. I mean, Adamski's saying, telling an FBI agent, within the next 12 months, San Diego will be bombed. The United States is in the same state of deterioration as the Roman Empire prior to its collapse. The government is a corrupt form of government and capitalists are enslaving the poor. That's not the kind of thing they wanted beings from outer space to be broadcasting. Whereas Angelucci, in contrast, who was actually Carl Jung's favorite contactee, is saying, communism is Earth's present fundamental enemy and masks beneath it, the banner spearhead of the united force of evil. It's so we can see who was on which side in that equation.
The interesting thing is, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. The interesting thing is that Angelucci, in one of his two books, actually says that during a tour of the East Coast of the U.S., he was approached by what he described as a mysterious group that wanted him to slant his lectures down, as he called it, the party line. And he refused to do that. And it was round about this time that he got this visit from this guy, Adam. So even though Angelucci wasn't promoting it, it may well have been the case that somebody wanted to know who wanted him to promote it. I think that's a possibility.
Yeah. And you know, the thing we really mustn't forget that at this time, we don't think of it anymore, but the threat of communism and of communist infiltrators inside America and inside even the the military and the government and even in the White House was not just a fear, it was an absolute reality. So anybody who was espousing anything that seemed to be promoting to communist viewpoints was really treated extremely seriously. And I believe, actually, my sort of hunch is that's why the Murray Island incident happened with Kenneth Arnold back in July 47, because after his June sighting of over Mount Rainier, Arnold rather certainly wasn't talking about outer space. He was talking about possibly Soviet experimental craft, but he also talked a lot about American craft possibly using atomic engines. And the irony was that he wouldn't have known it, but at the time the Air Force was actually sort of on the drawing board, at least experimenting with the idea of nuclear propulsion for aircraft. So to have him going talking willy-nilly to the press and anyone who had listened about these things was, you know, potentially made him a threat. So I think what the Murray Island incident may have been about was sort of setting up a sort of honey trap in order to investigate him and his real motives. And of course it ended tragically with the first two deaths ever for the newly formed United States Air Force.
I'll tell you what, I wanted to ask you a question here. You touched on Roswell earlier. Can we consider Roswell in the same framework, that it was something that was staged and just maybe got out of control, that people today still believe it was a UFO crash?
I mean, Roswell is just such a, as we all know, just such an incredible tangle that I'm sort of hesitant to get too involved in it, but I do talk about it in the book. And, I think one thing I've sort of wondered is if, personally, I think it may well have been the Mogul balloon that the Air Force said it was, which is probably the most controversial viewpoint you can put forward. You know, it may well have been a Mogul balloon and perhaps the Roswell Army Air Force Base press people thought, well, the best thing to do is just cover it up, and if we say it's a flying saucer, then no one will take it seriously. And then, of course, this shot around the world, and their superiors may well have said, "You said what? Are you crazy? You know, get on the telegraph and the radio right now and tell them it was just a weather balloon," and hence the staging of the famous photograph with Jesse and myself. So I think that's one possibility. And the thing to bear in mind is that this absolutely worked, and there are next to no mentions of Roswell in the UFO literature until 1979, 1980, when Bill Moore, who got involved with the Benowitz story and Rick Doty and the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, he researched and wrote the book that was co-authored with Charles Burlett. And so Roswell just didn't exist. I was reminded of this recently talking to John Rimmer of Magonia, and one of his colleagues, Peter Rogerson, compiled what was considered at the time, you know, really the most comprehensive database of UFO accounts through the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And until the Roswell material started coming out in the late 70s, Roswell didn't even figure in this database, which really gives a sense of what a non-story it was until it was re-excavated. So I think whatever the reason and whatever they did, we know that it worked.
Well, the one thing about Roswell that bothers a lot of people and bothers me is the fact that we have people remembering what happened 20, 30, 40 years previously. And memories can change. Popular culture can change. Mm-hmm. It's really difficult to iron this out. Now, yes, the people who support Roswell say there is a remarkable consistency in the stories, and I'll leave it at that. I want to ask you, Mark, about something else, because we focus mostly on UFOs, and this is peripherally connected to it. One of the questions, in fact, the question most often posed in our forums over at forum.thepowercast.com mm-hmm. about your book, they're asking about crop circles. That's all they seem to be concerned about. So tell me about crop circles and how this is part of this picture.
Okay. I mean, I would quickly like to just to back you up there and reiterate your point on the fallibility of memory. And actually, very quickly, I talk in the book about Elizabeth Loftus's experiments, whereby she was able to induce false memories in people that they had met Bugs Bunny as a child at Disneyland, and of course, the lawyers of Warner Brothers and Walt Disney would not allow Bugs Bunny to be wandering around Disneyland. But without
unless they met Mel Blanc, of course.
Unless Mel Blanc.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mel Blanc, the late Mel Blanc comedian, was originally the voice of Bugs Bunny and Porky Pig, and I think his son took it over. This is just trivia that nobody cares about. But let me tell everybody that we have Mark Pilkington, and he's author of a book called Mirage Men. It's a hardcover book subtitled An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. And we were focusing briefly on how memories may be altered over a period of time. I don't think I met Bugs Bunny as a kid, by the way. Our co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Powercast.
Yeah. Hey neighbors, ever thought about creating a website? With HostGator, you can create your own website with your very own .com domain name. HostGator has a free site builder and thousands of design templates to create your website today. Whether you want to create a blog, a photo gallery, a family page, or a website for your business, HostGator has the right plan for you, starting at less than $5 a month for ultra-reliable website hosting with 99.9% uptime and true 24/7 live support available by phone, chat, or email and based right here in the U.S. Don't be left without a website. It's more affordable and easier than you think. Sign up at technightowl.com/gator, that's G-A-T-O-R, to get the lowest possible price. At HostGator, that's technightowl.com/gator to get a special deal on all their web hosting services.
When making important financial decisions, you should always know the facts. That's why Midas Resources is willing to pay you to read the facts. Midas Resources, a team of hand-picked financial specialists with decades of financial experience who are ready to provide you with state-of-the-art, up-to-date financial services. Midas Resources offers a host of services and stands behind their products. In fact, if you call and order their free Midas report, Midas Resources will pay you. This detailed report will provide you with financial history on the safest and most profitable areas to invest in. If you read the report, Midas Resources will send you a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar. So what are you waiting for? Get the facts and call Midas Resources toll free at 888-292-2709. That's 888-292-2709. And remember, if you read the Midas report, you'll receive a free Walking Liberty silver half dollar.
Men, when you want the spark back in your love life, when you want to bring back intimacy, when you want to please the special woman in your life, use Mojo Ryzen. Mojo Ryzen is a safe, revolutionary herbal sexual formula for men that combines ancient Chinese school of thought and modern science to significantly support stamina, performance, and pleasure. Mojo Ryzen is a proven 100% natural product that works the first time, every time. Mojo Ryzen works even after consuming alcohol. Mojo Ryzen will not give you unwanted side effects. Mojo Ryzen will allow you to give your partner what they deserve. Try just 3 capsules of Mojo Ryzen, and if not completely satisfied, send back the remainder for a full refund. Buy Mojo Ryzen at mojo-radio.com. That's mojo-radio.com. Or call toll free 1-877-330-1120. That's 877-330-1120. Go big, go strong with Mojo Ryzen all night long.
Where have all the military surplus stores gone? Don't worry, you don't need one. Because everything you need at Military Surplus is at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E, Military.com. One of the last surviving true military surplus stores in the country. Go online now to MainMilitary.com and discover a source for hard-to-find surplus items at true surplus prices. Surplus gun cleaning kits as low as $2.99. Complete chemical suits as low as $11.99. See our huge selection of gas masks, filters, and accessories. Finish M10 gas masks are 3 for $30, and Swiss filters are 3 for $12. Searching for strike anywhere matches? MainMilitary.com has them, plus a whole new product line of survival and first aid kits and lots more. Get free shipping on orders over $50 only at MainMilitary.com. That's M-A-I-N-E Military.com, or call 877-608-0179, 877-608-0179. MainMilitary.com, the main name in military supply.
On air, online,
and on demand.
They say we offer simple answers to complex problems.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
We want to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com. Get in on all the action at forum.theparacast.com.
We have Mark Pilkington joining us. Nick Redfern is the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the Paracast. And we're talking about the accuracy of memories. And very briefly, you mentioned how people were made to think that they met Bugs Bunny at Disneyland. And this is a way of manipulating memories. So anytime people remember things that happened as a child, Is that something that may be very faulty, maybe very colored?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, as you were saying, it's, you know, trying to remember what you were doing this time yesterday, let alone what you were doing 40, 50, 60 years ago. I think we have to be very, very careful of people's recollections of, you know, of alleged UFO events. And we were referencing the Roswell story. There was actually a very good little sort of story in the new issue of 40 and Times, which is a British of magazine of anomalous and paranormal phenomena, with an alien abductee who was convinced for years that he had childhood memories of being, classic abduction memories of being picked up by the grave and tampered with medically and emotionally and psychically, and was absolutely convinced was very much involved in the UK abduction sort of scene as such as it was, until he found his actual notebooks from the period that he remembered these events taking place, and his notebooks described experiences that were entirely mundane and had absolutely nothing to do with aliens, and he, you know, realized that he'd allowed himself to kind of project these memories into his own past, into his own unconscious, so you have to, we really do have to be careful, and if we consider a lot of, certainly the historic UFO incidents as kind of stories, which is effectively what they are, as sort of folklore to a certain extent, then if you look at the way they escalate and they become increasingly sort of involved and convoluted and dramatic over the years, that's, you know, if you think of, you know, fishermen's tales, you know, the fish keep getting bigger and the story keeps getting more involved and more dramatic.
I'll tell you what, let me just shortcut this because we only have a few segments left.
Okay.
And I do want to get into crop circles in a moment. But Can you say at the end of it there is a real UFO mystery that's involved?
Yeah, I think there is. I do. And I think that's the tragedy of all of this disinformation and deception and game playing that goes on within the UFO world and the UFO community is that we may well, therefore, be missing the true signal, and there may well be there may be one needle still buried amongst the haystacks of disinformation. My sense is that as yet, and this will be controversial, as yet I've yet to see any convincing evidence that's sort of made me feel that we have had an ongoing engagement or visitation from extraterrestrial intelligences. But that's just me, and I certainly would never want to stop anyone else from believing what they wanted to believe. But I think people, you know, really do have to take very careful account and consideration of the extent to which this field is open to manipulation and exploitation by tricksters and sort of deception specialists, both within the military and intelligence organizations and within the UFO community itself.
Okay, crop circles. As I said, people who inquired about your book talked about crop circles. So can we assume that all the crop circles are fake, that people just make those things in their backyards just for the heck of it?
They're not fake, but they're real. But yes, they are made by people, and not in their own backyards, almost always in other people's backyard, usually farmers who are growing wheat or rape, as in the UK, certainly are the most pliable crops. But yeah, my sort of general rule of thumb, and I can say this as someone who was involved in making crop circles for over nine years, is that as a general rule of thumb, anything more than a kind of misshapen blob has been made by people, by groups of anything from three to, or two actually, to at most I'd say 12 people. And to be fair, a few misshapen blobs are made by people as well. You know,
it depends on your ability at artistic pursuits. Or exactly. Are there basically these models they could just trace to make crop circles?
No, it's quite involved and involves, it does require a lot of skill and, you know, hard work and a lot of planning, and you can't just go into a field and just sort of freestyle it, because you'll make a horrible mess. It doesn't work like that. It does require a great deal of preparation. And it's not something to be dismissed. It's an incredibly elaborate and genuinely skillful art form is how I would sort of present it. But I think the interesting part, you know, the construction itself is like being a giant spirograph or a giant geometry set. And really the art to the crop circle phenomenon, I think, is in the reception, is in the people who view them and generate, you know, really quite stunning and amazing and even beautiful interpretations around what are effectively, patterns. Etched into the fields of English countryside.
Okay, let's expand that a little bit because we have just a couple of segments left. And that is, what about general paranormal events? Now, you mentioned UFOs applying to a certain category of disinformation. We have crop circles. Is that part of the government plot, or is it just always individuals who are playing games?
I don't think there's ever been... As far as I know, and my friends who I was making crop circles with and are much more deeply enmeshed in the culture surrounding them than I am, they pretty much know who has made everything over a year and actually going back sort of quite some time. Now, it's curious that there's only one, I think, that I remember they couldn't identify, if I'm right, and if John Lundberg was on the line, I'm sure he'd be able to correct me. But that's the famous Mandelbrot set formation. And actually, John and his colleague Rob Irving were sort of hired to recreate this for the BBC a few years ago, which they did in driving rain and wind one night. And they actually said it was a difficult formation to do. But that's as far as I know. That's the only sort of classic formation they haven't been able to pin to a particular team or group of people.
Okay, back to normal paranormal events or abnormal paranormal events. Other than UFOs, and we're setting aside crop circles, what else are they doing? This is a question that's going to create a cliffhanger because we'll have to have an answer in the next section, which is, what other types of strange events are the disinformation specialists, mirage men, or otherwise trying to produce or create? A reminder that Nick Redfern returns next week as a guest with Chris O'Brien as the co-host. Nick will be talking about his new book, Final Events. We have Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. The co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Is there a secret UFO agenda? Do strange creatures from the darkest corners of the mind roam the earth? Is there evidence for mind control, time travel, or devious government conspiracies? Find out the inside scoop on the latest conspiracies, paranormal activity, and Fortean phenomena when you subscribe to Tim Beckley's Conspiracy Journal. It's jam-packed with stories, special book and DVD promotions, and the best news, it's absolutely free, sent right to your mailbox. Plus, a bonus free email newsletter sent out every Friday. Simply send an email with your name and address to MrUFO at WebTV.net. That's MrUFO at WebTV.net. Find out what they don't want you to know.
Great news for pure water lovers. The Big Berkey Water Filter is available once again. And stay tuned to hear about a valuable offer from Berkey Water Filters. Choosing the right water purification system can be a daunting task. That's why BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com shows you a cost and benefit comparison. The Berkey Water Filter is economical, with a single set of filters that can last for 5 to 10 years. Berkey Water Filters are healthy and far superior to other filtration systems. They remove harmful pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy chemicals like chlorine. clean. And Berkey water filter systems are powerful enough to purify both treated and untreated water, like stagnant ponds. Get the gold standard in water filters at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. For a limited time, choose a free shower filter, fluoride filters, or two Sport Berkey bottles with every system purchase. And GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. Details at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com or call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
If you owe money to the IRS, you can't make the problem go away by yourself. But with the help of Dan Pilla, you can get your problem solved once and for all.
Hi, I'm Dan Pilla. For 30 years, I've helped thousands of people solve their tax debt problem, and I can help you solve yours, too. We take a very simple but proven three-step approach to solving your problem. First, we stabilize IRS collection actions so you don't have to worry about the IRS seizing your bank account or paycheck. Next, we build a comprehensive plan to get your tax debt reduced to the fullest extent possible, sometimes even completely eliminated. And finally, we work with you every step of the way to get your problem solved once and for all. Call us for a free consultation. Call 1-800-346-6829. We'll work together to get your problem solved guaranteed.
Dan Pilla has been protecting taxpayers from the IRS for three decades, and he can help you too. Call us today at 800-346-6829. That's 800-34-NO-TAX.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of microplant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Microplant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, microplant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
How do you spell hard-hitting talk radio? G C N. The Genesis Communications Radio Network.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
We return with Mark Pilkington, author of Mirage Men, and Nick Redfern's our co-host. I'm Gene Steinberger in the Paracast. So let us look at that. Other than UFOs and such, what other kinds of paranormal events are perhaps being staged?
I think I would guess that possibly quite a few. I mean, the ones I talk about in the book, there are two that are my real favorites. And one is from the early 1950s in the Philippines, when there was a fear that the insurgent communist guerrillas in the Philippines, who were called the Huk, were going to stage a sort of a coup and take over. So the CIA sent in one of their kind of best men, a man called Colonel Edward Lansdale, who was actually, ironically, an advertising executive sort of before he got involved in intelligence. And I think there's sort of definite parallels to be drawn between the work of the Mirage Men and the advertising industry. But Lansdale, something of a legend, he's said to have been the inspiration for the character Alden Pyle in Graham Greene's book, The Quiet American. But he was sent into the Philippines of initially undercover to kind of get a sense of what it was that the culture there, the people there were interested in and what they hoped for and, of course, what they were afraid of. And the key thing he found they were afraid of was a fearsome vampire called the Aswang. And this sort of goes back deep into sort of Philippine folklore and mythology. So what they did was they began seeding rumors that the Aswang lived in the region occupied by the Huk, by the communist guerrillas. And the rumors sort of soon spread, and the fear began to spread amongst the villagers and the guerrillas. Then one night, the guerrillas were out on a patrol, followed closely by Lansdale and his team. They plucked the last unlucky Huk from the patrol, hung him from a tree, drained him of blood, killing him through puncture marks in his neck, then dropped him back onto the trail so that when his comrades came back, they found him, and their worst fears were confirmed, that the Aswang was well and truly at large in the area. And actually, they fled soon afterwards, and Lansdale's larger mission to sort of get rid of the communist menace through this and other operations was a success, at least for a few years. So I think, you know, you can see the extent to which they would, you know, stop at nothing really to get their work done and fight the communist threat, and if that included killing people with fake vampires, then so be it. Another one I liked actually comes from the Vietnam War, when the Army's 6th PSYOPS Battalion developed an audio recording called the Wandering Soul, which they would roam around the forest at night playing from sort of special loudspeaker mounted backpacks, mounted on backpacks. And the audio tape, that's a magnetic reel-to-reel tape, preyed on Vietnamese traditions of the unquiet dead, and contained a conversation between a little girl and the wandering soul of her dead father, who'd been killed away from their village while fighting the Americans. And they used traditional Vietnamese funeral music, as well as lots of eerie reverb effects to kind of transmit this spooky message through the night. And it was apparently so successful that a number of American soldiers were spooked out by it as well. And one interesting point that's made is that the Vietnamese soldiers would always shoot in the direction of this recording, but the insinuation being that they were terrified that there were ghosts at large, and I presume that they could kill them with bullets. So that's two very clear examples of other supernatural and paranormal kind of themes that have in the past been exploited by the intelligence and deception specialists. And I think, you know, what I'm trying to show in the book is that UFOs are just another example of this, albeit one that's kind of become much more kind of deeply ingrained into the culture and actually has ended up turning around to bite the Mirage Men on the rear, because these ideas are now kind of deeply entrenched within the military community, within the intelligence community, even with some people in the White House, and certainly in the popular culture and the wider Western mindset. So, and I think, you know, it's something that's kind of grown probably out of their control by this time.
Well, the one thing, of course, is that you can find UFO sightings before there was this military, industrial, and intelligence complex.
Yeah.
You can find sightings that, if real, involve simultaneous radar, visual sightings, sometimes with photographs. So there appears to be some sort of genuine UFO mystery in the midst of all this junk.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'd agree, and certainly, you know, the UFO mystery certainly predates Kenneth Arnold's 1947 sighting, and, you know, we know about the reports of airship sightings in the late 19th century, and even cases going much further back. But you mentioned radar cases, and one of the sort of things I look at in Mirage Men is a system called Palladium, which was developed, I think, from the late 40s and through to the present day. I would expect it's still used by the CIA and the NSA, and that's a by now very sophisticated technology for kind of projecting false radar paints onto radar scopes of either on the ground or on aircraft. And certainly by the 1960s, it was developed enough that they could actually change the size of the radar paint and the speed at which it was flying and the direction in which it was flying. And I learned this from reading Body of Secrets by James Mansard, a very interesting history of the NSA, and he mentioned drone aircraft with scalable radar signatures being used over Vietnam. So I started sort of looking around for this and found that this was something that had first been a phenomenon that was first actually reported in 1945 in the Pacific campaign, when Navy ships kind of clustered together would start picking up strange radar signals, which they actually ended up attributing to the all the sort of different electromagnetic and radar emissions being kind of pumped out by all the ships that created sort of strange anomalous signals. And over time, the system was refined, and I really think can be seen to be behind the number of sort of radar cases on the record.
There was one big case here, which, you know, is still considered mysterious, and we'll have to ask more about it in our next section. Washington National Airport, 1952, the summer of 52. And some suggested it was temperature inversions and Major Kehoe, assuming he was not part of the government conspiracy, made a big to-do about the fact that this couldn't be, it had to be something that was real, it had to be evidence of something strange, something unusual, and we'll have to explore that in the next section. We have Mark Pilkington. The book, hardcover, is Mirage Men, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. And even if you believe UFOs, I'm sure, neighbors, you want to find out about the stuff that's fake, about the stuff that's some kind of military disinformation operation, so you can check out the real stuff. The co-host is Nick Redfern. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in
the Paracast.
Are you ready to order the official Paracast t-shirt? You asked, we answered. We're now taking orders for the official Paracast t-shirt. It comes in white, 100% cotton. The front of it features the same logo that we have on our community forums. On the back it says, Separating Signal from Noise. To order the official Paracast t-shirt, here's all you have to do. Visit our new online store at store.theparacast.com. One more time, that's store.theparacast.com. You can use a major credit card to place your order for the official Paracast t-shirt. Hey, neighbors, we have one more thing to talk about, and that's more merchandise at the official Paracast store. We have hats, we have jackets, we even have a flip video camcorder customized with the Paracast logo at the official Paracast store. It's all now available at the official Paracast store, store.theparacast.com.
If you're a regular listener of this station, then disaster survival is vitally important to you and your family. Long-term food storage, water filtration, emergency food preparation, and quality survival products are not just talk topics, but a way of life. We strongly believe in being prepared for any emergency. We are foodandwaterstore.com, owned and operated by people who are into emergency preparedness. And because we are preppers like you, we own and use the products we offer. You'll find quality name brand proven products like Global Sun Ovens, Wonder Mill Flour Mills, Mountain House Foods, Satchel and Berkey water filters, and many more, plus videos and articles at foodandwaterstore.com. 90% of our customers are return customers because of our low prices and excellent customer service. We still believe the customer is always right. Discover what your family needs to weather any storm at foodandwaterstore.com or call 1-877-773-7123. Foodandwaterstore.com, helping you prepare for the storms of life.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 5 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $209, and the Berkey guy will include three Sport Berkey water bottles and ship everything to you free of charge. That's right, three Sport Berkey water bottles and free shipping. An $87 value, yours free. Call the Berkey guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, this is Alex Jones. Did you know that the global elite are now storing non-hybrid seeds in secret storage vaults near the Arctic Circle? Did you know that in a real meltdown, non-hybrid seeds can become more valuable than silver or gold? It's true, seeds have outperformed even gold and silver before in this country, and it's possible that could even happen again. So our friends at Solutions from Science have put together the perfect mix of non-hybrid seeds. They call it a survival seed bank, and it can produce an endless supply of nutrient-dense food for you and your family. And here's the best part. These seeds have not been genetically modified in any way, and you actually get enough seeds to plant a full-acre crisis garden. So visit them today at survivalseedbank.com. That's survivalseedbank.com. Or give them a call at 877-327-0365. That's 877-327-0365. Remember, in a real crisis, non-hybrid seeds are the ultimate barter item. This is Alex Jones for SurvivalSeedBank.com.
Tired of searching for great talk radio?
Search no more.
I just want to hear more of it.
We are the GCN Radio Network.
Yes, yes.
You've entered another dimension. You've entered the Paracast.
Return with Mark Pilkington. It's Mirage Men is the book, and Nick Redfern is the co-host. I'm Gene Steinberg. You're in the PowerCast. So the question on the table, 1952, was that temperature inversions at Washington National Airport?
Well, I think this is really one of the most, absolutely the most critical UFO incidents on the record, because it's the one that really firstly, I think drew the CIA into the story, and just night was an example of the greatest fear that anyone could have surrounding the UFO phenomenon, which is that it could infiltrate your airspace right over your capital city. You know, nobody would be able to do a thing about it, and this was, of course, something that would have sent sort of pulses and temperatures rising all through the military and intelligence communities. But actually, again, going back to Leon Davidson, he was actually the first to suggest the idea that the two nights of UFO activity in July 1952 over Washington D.C. were actually games being played using an early version of this radar spoofing system that would become known as Palladium. And there's too much information to go into in this segment, but there are a lot of pieces of circumstantial evidence that would point to some kind of deliberate deception. For one thing, the interceptors that were sent up to investigate the radar sightings had been moved just before to an airport further away from Washington DC National Airport. Edward Ruppelt, the head of Blue Book, talks about how someone from an unnamed agency, and I would guess that that might have been the CIA or the NSA, had warned him that there was going to be a large UFO incident over Washington DC or New York within a week, and it happened as described. You have Harry Barnes, the radar operator, discussing, complaining that the objects on his radar seem to be listening in on his conversations, and particularly with the interceptors sent up to track the objects and seem to respond to any information he gave them. And when the aircraft went up to find them, the radar objects blipped out and then returned as soon as the aircraft had returned to base. You have perhaps one of the most interesting sort of pieces of circumstantial evidence is that John Sanford, who was the Air Force intelligence general, who basically supervised the kind of press relations and public relations after the incident, and in fact they had the largest press conference in the Air Force's history since, and the largest sort of military conference since World War II around this subject. He would go on to become the second ever head of the National Security Agency just 4 years after this incident, which was and the National Security Agency itself was established just a few months after the Washington overflights. And is it a coincidence? I don't know that the Palladium system, this radar spoofing system, was primarily or was largely used by the NSA from the late 50s on. So it's certainly there are various other tidbits of information that would suggest something very fishy was going on there. And the question, of course, is motivation, and that's something we can't gather from...
Seems like a lot of effort, a lot of expense to go through all this nonsense just to fake UFO cases, because if anything, that's being used as a linchpin to advance the case for UFO reality. That and other cases involving simultaneous radar and visual sightings, and if they're all to be blamed on Palladium, on this device to fake radar images, you know, it gets to be a little bit of a stretch, don't you think?
Yes, I hear you. I hear exactly what you're saying, and I think it's the timing of the of this. This is why I think it's important to reiterate that I don't believe there's a kind of continuous program to generate UFO stories. I think it's just something that steps in every now and again when it's expedient to do so. But if you look at the timing of the Washington overflight, I really think it seems to follow a pattern of promotion of the idea that flying saucers, as they were at the time, were from outer space. And if you look at a huge Life magazine article that had come out that previous April, so just a few months before, that was allegedly came from the mouth of senior Air Force figures themselves, that flying saucers were indeed from outer space, which was a real about turn for the Air Force, who'd spent a lot of time trying to quash this notion. And we can speculate about why this might have been, but I think it's interesting to note that around this time, so summer 1952, was really the very, very first dramatic escalation of Cold War tensions, as the Korean War was running, and there were real concerns that certainly in the British intelligence establishment, that this could become a flashpoint that would result in the dropping of more atomic bombs. So this was a very, very tense time, and I don't know if the Washington overflight may have been intended to just demonstrate how easily this kind of false flag operation could be conducted over American airspace, or it could have been deliberately designed to draw the attention of the CIA and get them involved in UFO investigations, which to some extent it succeeded in doing. So we can only speculate, but I think what we see is a sort of two-tier system for both promoting and sort of dissuading and denigrating the UFO story. So I think, and this I would suggest, is a sort of the process that continues, where you have on one level the people who are sort of already deeply immersed and ingrained in the UFO culture, who you can't, as I'm sure we're all aware, you can't convince people who want to believe in something strongly enough that their beliefs are mistaken or misguided. So I think those are the ones they just will keep encouraging and are feeding more UFO information. At the same time, there's always obviously been an attempt to dissuade other people from getting involved in the UFO subject, particularly, say, people in the who are already involved with sensitive technologies or the intelligence or within the intelligence or military spheres. So I don't know, that would be my suggestion, that there is this sort of two-tier operation at work.
Well, unfortunately, in the next minute, we can't prove it one way or the other. But certainly there's a compelling story to be voiced there and expressed. The book is called Mirage Men by Mark Pilkington. The subtitle, An Adventure into Paranoia, Espionage, Psychological Warfare, and UFOs. Whether or not you believe in UFOs, certainly there's a lot of disinformation around. Mark, is there any place, a site that we can check out more of the things you do?
Yes, I've actually set up a blog specifically to discuss bits of issues and news related to Mirage Men. That's miragemen.wordpress.com. And I've been, if I say so myself, there's a lot of really interesting information up there. And I would, my plan is to actually start putting up some of the material that I ended up excising from the book for various reasons, mainly for reasons of length. I ended up cutting about 40,000 words of some interesting material.
Unfortunately, we have to cut this short because we're just about out of time. Nick Redfern, where do we find more of your stuff?
NickRedfern.com, an easy one to remember.
Easy to remember. I'm Gene Steinberg. This is the PowerCast. A special thank you to our co-host Nick Redfern and author Mark Pilkington for joining us this week on the PowerCast.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Nick. Thanks for your contributions about the Andalucci, and it's really interesting.
We'll never get to the bottom of that.
No. I love the fact that he was a young favourite contactee, and Jim was something of a certainly no friend of the communist.
A reminder that Nick Redfern returns next week as a guest with Chris O'Brien as the co-host. Nick will be talking about his new book, Final Events.
Paracast is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Hi, this is Ted Anderson. If you own an Apple iPhone and love to listen to your favorite programs on GCN, I've got good news for you. I'm proud to announce that GCN has a brand new iPhone app available for our dedicated listeners at GCNLive.com. Listen to your favorite hard-hitting GCN programs live or on demand right on your iPhone. And the best part? The GCN iPhone app can be yours absolutely free. Download the iPhone app today by clicking on the banner at GCNLive.com. Again, that's GCNLive.com.
We the people grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Ted Anderson, I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.